Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We are talking with Kathy Shore. She's a photographer based in New York City. She is a founder of a very interesting project, also a book. It's called Shot, 101 Survivors of Gun Violence in America. And we're also talking with Dr. Claudia Fruin, who's a pediatrician. She's with Bulletproof Kids. There's an event taking place. You can see a panel discussion involving these two, along with several others, moderated by Craig Wirth. And that'll be the King's English Bookshop tomorrow evening, 7 p.m., panel discussion based on this book. So Kathy Shore, at that panel discussion, also included in the book, there are some Utahns who've been victims of gun violence. I wonder if you could tell me about one or two of them.
We'll be three survivors from the Salt Lake area. And one of them, probably the most well-known, is Bishop Scott Hayashi, who I think people were surprised to find out that he was shot as a teenager in Washington, the state of Washington, when he was working in a record store. And there was an armed robbery at the record store, and he was shot and severely injured in that incident. There's also Carolyn Tuft, and Carolyn is one of the survivors of the Trolley Square shootings, and her daughter was killed at that unfortunate incident, and Carolyn was severely injured as well. And the third survivor is LaDawn Prue, and she's from Sandy, and she was shot as a teenager when she was walking into her house, in her front door of her house. Someone that had recently gotten out of prison, I think, was trying to kidnap her and shot her. So the three of them will be with us tomorrow evening.
Yeah, just I had no idea about Bishop Hayashi. As you said, most people don't. I wonder, I don't know if you talked to him. You tend to talk, at least you say, at least for half an hour with people to get them comfortable and get them ready for the photograph. I don't know, Bishop Hayashi said how this affected him.
I don't like to sometimes, I think that tomorrow he will talk better than I will about how it affected him. But I think that, you know, it's one of those situations where he was doing his job, and I think that he turned around and said what he didn't hear what the person said and was shot. And he had over a month recovery in the hospital. And I think it's better. I don't really like to tell, you know, how somebody is thinking at this moment now. I'm much better at giving you the kind of black and white caption information of the story. When I'm talking to somebody, sometimes, you know, I don't like to give their exact words as I think it's better if they will say that directly, how they felt and what they did. I mean, what they're telling me is okay to say is what I'm putting in the captions. And I think he is an activist against gun violence. So it has affected him in a way where he wants to help other people. And by being a man of God, I think that probably influenced his decision as well.
Yeah, fair enough. Let me ask you, I've been curious about this. This is more on firmer ground for you. The decision, there are many decisions that go into, I assume, how you're going to photograph the person. You made the decision you wanted to have them at the spot where the shooting happened. That's one decision, but many other things go into it. I wonder if you could take me through that. What exactly you're trying to capture from the people?
Well, I'm trying to capture something from inside of a person. Something. It's not like you're going to a place and saying to somebody, "Okay, I'm going to take your picture. Smile." It's more about you want that person to be in that moment in time and just feel what they're feeling being back in that space or being part of this project. So I call it the kind of photography that I was doing is a kind of guerrilla photography, because I hadn't met anyone prior to photographing them, and we had email and sometimes a phone conversation. When I would always meet somebody at a Starbucks or a coffee spot, or if they weren't shot in their home, so that we could talk, because I don't like to photograph people that I don't have them feeling comfortable with me and me feeling comfortable with them. So the conversation went anywhere from like a half hour. One person I spoke with 3 hours prior to photographing her. And then after we are in a place, usually outside, we would go to the place, and I had no control of any of the circumstances. If it was raining that day, we had to photograph in the rain. If it was, you know, cold, we were out in the cold, because I was usually traveling to a city and not going to be there for a long time, maybe a day or two. And in photographing 3 to 4 people in each location, time was really important. And then as a photographer, you're looking for the person to be comfortable, but also for the background to have some kind of interest or to work with the person that you're photographing. So it was very intense kind of doing that, and all the time to be relaxed and knowing that you're with somebody who is probably feeling a little on edge, being in a place that has a bad connotation to them. So if there are people who are portrait photographers that work in studios, and they would hate to do what I do, and I don't, I like the challenge of all of that, and I don't like photographing in a studio. So you have to really be, you have to be open to those kind of things, whichever way you choose to do your portraits.
I'm looking at this is one that really affected me, not only for the photograph but for the story. As most of these do in this book. This is James Armstrong. So this is Bozeman, Montana. Mm-hmm. He's got his hand on his truck. He's in a driveway. It looks like a regular subdivision, and he's holding his prosthetic limb. He was shot in the leg, lost his leg.
Yes, I'm going to be in Bozeman next week, and James is going to be on the panel in Bozeman. He's a young man who went to a party in Bozeman, and somebody at the party was acting loudly and aggressively, and James asked him to cool it, or just, you know, chill out, calm down, or, you know, just told him he was not, you know, he shouldn't be acting like that in this house. And the guy was a ex-military man. He went home. He got a rifle. He came back and he shot James point blank in the knee, necessitating the amputation of his leg, his lower leg. He shot James' friend and killed him. And the third friend of James, he held the rifle up to the gentleman's head, and the gun malfunctioned and didn't fire. So he attempted to kill 3 young men and killed one of them because of being told to, you know, just chill out.
And James Armstrong says, this quote from him, "The last thing I remember my friend saying as he lay there was, 'I don't want to die.'" This is the friend who died. It's just horrible. And he of course goes on with his life, but he now has this disability. Let me turn back briefly to Dr. Fruin. You're as a pediatrician, of course. That's your focus is on children. I'm not sure if you have to deal with trauma from gunshot wounds or other accidents or such from treating this in children.
No, not I personally. Not I practiced general pediatrics and stuff. It's just you can hear stories from, like, emergency room physicians. They're more likely to, you know, to receive these kids and stuff. But
But you see you see kind of the macro view, as you've been saying, that broad range of, in some cases, very preventable reasons why children are injured and die.
Right, and when you see the statistics, you know, the like I said, under 17, 4,000 kids in the U.S. killed or injured by firearms every year. I mean, that just blows my mind. You know, what it happens in Utah. The latest statistics show that firearm suicide has actually been going up the last 2 years. So in general, it's been maybe 10 kids a year will take their lives by firearms. Maybe the same number with hospitalizations. The latest statistics we have on that, though, is 2014, but there has actually been an increase in kids taking their lives with guns. And this is another startling statistic in Utah. It's the number one, suicide is the number one cause of death in kids under 17, the number one. So that's beyond accidents, diseases, suicide. And so in general, about half of those will be with firearms. Mm. So that's higher than the national average, which is, I think, the number two cause of death is by suicide under 17. In Utah, it's number one.
Mm. Let me turn back just about 2 minutes left to give the last word to Kathy Shore. So just quoting again from your website, the increasing ubiquity of gun violence has unfortunately become the norm across the world, particularly in the United States, where we've begun to hear horror after horror, and then we become numb. And I think that is absolutely true. What's it going to take for us to become un-numb to this? Of course, you're trying to help with this book.
Well, I think we have to talk like we are doing now. What Dr. Fruin is stating is a preventable thing. I can't imagine one parent in the U.S. saying that the gun locks are a bad idea and we shouldn't want to do that. Who, as a parent, would say that is a something we shouldn't be messing with? I don't think anybody would. So why aren't gun locks out there and accessible for all people that have firearms and encouraged? And I think that Claudia, the way she spoke about having a law versus if somebody has a tragedy, I think that is, you know, that's the dilemma there in it. How do you prosecute, or do you just have the person live with this horror for the rest of their life as punishment enough? But that's a preventable thing. Other things like domestic violence, people who are domestic violence abusers should not be able to have a gun. They shouldn't, because they are. It's been proven that they kill their spouses more frequently. So there are certain things that I think gun owners can agree on. And those are the things that we have to start talking about to make things better. It's not going to change. It's not going to prevent all of these incidents. But there are ways where we can work together from both sides of this issue and say these are things we're in agreement with, and these are things that we have to start dialoguing about.
We'll leave it there. We've been talking with photographer Kathy Shore. Her project is SHOT, 101 Survivors of Gun Violence in America. And we've also had with us Dr. Claudia Fruin, pediatrician. She's with Bulletproof Kids. They'll be both participating along with others on a panel discussion. That'll be happening at the King's English Bookshop tomorrow evening, 7 p.m. in Salt Lake City. You can find out more about SHOT at shotproject.org. Kathy Shore, Claudia Fruin, thank you so much to you both.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having.
Mm-hmm. And thanks for listening to Access Utah.